It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Was a time when nobody confused the Middle East with the United States of America. Those times have changed. I'm Bob Siegel, your host. It's always good to be with you, but it's not too good for our country right now. Naturally, there is hope. Yes, we can always put our hope in God and perhaps in a few of the brave individuals whom God may be using right now. For example, GOP Representative Jim Jordan, the Republican from Ohio, tweeted about something else going on in Ohio, specifically the derailing of a train in East Palestine, Ohio, and its lightning speed, skillful response by Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. Jordan suggested that Buttigieg's hiring wasn't a good idea, and he has no transportation experience. Well, obviously, that's the understatement of three centuries, but these days, with the truth in such short supply, caving into the narrative of the left and the woke of the left and the weirdness of the left, even an understated truth comes across as a breath of fresh air. We've all heard the story by now, not only about a horrible train crash, but a controlled release and burning, supposedly controlled, of chemicals taken from debris. And that was done to curtail an explosion. Residents were evacuated before the chemical release. They have since been allowed to return. They have not exactly enjoyed themselves since the return. Neither are they experiencing a premium quality of life. This from the administration concerned about our environment to the point of shoving the Green New Deal down our throats and down our gas tanks and down the regulation pipe, not to be confused with the Keystone pipe, the regulation pipe designed to flush capitalism out of business. Now, in all fairness to Pete's boss, Joe Biden, he probably isn't really doing anything here other than what he's told. But whoever the puppet masters are, the puppet does speak. He moves his lips like a dummy and a ventriloquist at the same time. "I will be out there at some point," Biden told reporters. Wow, the little town slept well after hearing those words. Maybe Biden will tell the deadly chemicals to give the town a break. There are probably reasons he feels he wasn't able to make the trip right away. When hearing about Palestine from his advisors and when hearing about Congressman Jordan's criticism, Biden probably thought they were talking about the Middle East country of Jordan, criticizing his handling of the Middle East Palestinians. In fact, frankly, this administration has been kinder and more helpful to the Middle East Palestinians than to the citizens of Palestine, Ohio. Well, serves them right. Those Ohio Palestinians were heavy in their votes for Trump. The Middle East Palestinians only vote in people like Hamas and other purveyors of peace. And speaking of Trump, Trump visited East Palestine before the Biden administration. Well, we can't have that. So Pothole Pete finally made an appearance of his own, as described here by Fox News. While finally visiting the residents of East Palestine, Ohio, after the catastrophic train derailment that occurred there nearly 3 weeks ago, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg made an unfortunate pun that amused Twitter users. While the Biden administration official addressed the residents of the Ohio town, as well as the press on Thursday, he apparently forgot his point mid-sentence and admitted to his audience that he lost his train of thought. That was from Fox News. I guess I would be wasting your time pointing out the irony of this pun. It hasn't exactly gone unnoticed. Yeah, Pete, we're forced to agree. Keeping track of trains obviously isn't your greatest skill. Neither is keeping trains on tracks. Exactly what you are skilled at, I'm sure I don't know. Neither does Biden. Neither does anyone else in his administration. You weren't picked because of your experience, Pete. Why do I say that? Because you have no experience. At least none that your earlier job as mayor demonstrated. But then, the Biden administration was interested only in picking people who are insulated from criticism, and this makes you a valuable commodity. We're not allowed to criticize you because you're gay and you're married to another man. End of story. Nothing else to see here, folks. Not that your lifestyle is any of my business. It's not. You can do whatever you want. But one of the things you wanted was to make it our business by going out of your way to emphasize this during the 2020 campaign. And Democrats are great at symbolism over substance. That's why our vice president, who, like our president, isn't exactly the sharpest tool in the shed, is also protected, because to criticize her, we are showing racism. Racism because she's black. And we are showing sexism. Sexism because she's a woman. That's two for one. That's also a pack of nonsense. I will continue to criticize her, and for one reason only. She's a lousy vice president, and she would be a nightmarish president. I don't mind a woman president. I supported Michelle Bachmann, and I have supported several African-American candidates over the years, including Herman Cain and Ben Carson, and I would be absolutely delighted to have a president who is both African-American and female. If Candace Owen were to run, I'd vote for her in a heartbeat. But then, Owen is an intelligent person with genuine convictions, not a blithering idiot with no moral compass. And while as a Christian I am not in agreement with same-sex lifestyles, that would not keep me from voting for a gay person so long as he or she is actually qualified. You see, in politics, we work with people who come together for a few common important issues, mostly regarding public safety. Other than that, the government shouldn't have that wide of a net. We don't have to agree 100% regarding lifestyle and ideology or religious conviction. We need to agree on some things in the same church, but out in politics and the political world, we don't have to agree with everything. So my problem with Buttigieg is not that he's gay. It's just that I'm not going to refrain from criticizing him simply because he's gay. The man should not only be answering for train wrecks, the man's record as Secretary of Transportation is a train wreck. Actually, in all fairness, there is one thing he does well, and this is a skill he shares with his fellow Democrats. They are all great at the card game Pinochle. You know, the game where you play your trump cards, and every time the Dems are in a jam, they play the trump card, they and their media surrogates. Like in Buttigieg's interview with MSNBC's Joy Reid, she asked about Trump's visit to the town of Palestine, suggesting that his rollback of regulations contributed to the accident. These are her words. You know, the sort of theatrics of Donald Trump being in Palestine were odd, but this is a community that voted overwhelmingly for him. The county that Palestine is in voted 71-29 for Donald Trump. I want you to reflect on the irony. In 2016, it was 68-26. This is a Trump county. What do you make of the fact that he went there despite the fact that the regulations he rolled back were partly responsible for this tragedy? This is what Reid asked Buttigieg, and Buttigieg was delighted with the softball pitch. He said in response, "We're constrained by law on some areas of rail regulation, like the braking rule withdrawn by the Trump administration in 2018 because of a law passed by Congress in 2015, but we are using the powers we do have to keep people safe." Yeah, safety. That's all they care about. Our safety. Try explaining that to the residents of East Palestine, Ohio. Try explaining that to any American who had their surgery postponed in 2020 because COVID had become the politically correct disease, and any sensible way of dealing with COVID became the politically incorrect cure. Actually, Pete, the only power you're using is the power of excuse. So the Trump administration rolled back a regulation. That was the problem. That? Really? Well, if that was the problem, why didn't your administration do anything about repealing the repeal? It's not like President-elect Biden doesn't improvise his own laws without going through Congress, such as forgiving student loans. But back to safety. Continuing with the subject of safety, here's another report from Fox News. A new scientific review suggests that widespread masking may have done little to nothing to curb the transmission of COVID. Oh, you think? Nah. All right, the article continues. When comparing the use of medical surgical masks to wearing no masks, the review found that wearing a mask may make little to no difference in how many people caught a flu-like illness, COVID-like illness. 9 studies, 276,917 people, and probably makes little or no difference in how many people have flu, COVID, confirmed by a laboratory test. 6 studies, 13,919 people. The review, titled Physical Interventions to Interrupt or Reduce the Spread of Respiratory Viruses, was led by 12 researchers from esteemed universities around the world. And that was another report from Fox News. I should tell you that experts are also admitting that natural immunity is superior to the vaccines that people were forced to take in order to keep their jobs, and that lockdowns didn't work. They caused more physical harm. They caused emotional harm. So how soon before we get an apology from the governors and mayors who enacted these shutdowns? Well, I wouldn't hold your breath. You had enough difficulty breathing when you were wearing a mask like wearing a badge. The truth is, this was never about your safety. They wanted an excuse to make everyone dress in uniform, submissive ways. They wanted an excuse to close down small businesses and churches because less competitive business makes you more dependent on the government. Remember how the big chains like Walmart and Costco were allowed to stay open, but the little mom-and-pop stores were not deemed essential services? And remember how churches were not essential, but strip clubs were allowed to stay open? That's because the church, voluntary compromising from many of our pastors today notwithstanding, is one of the few places where you will hear a narrative that challenges the status quo. You weren't finding any pushback or challenge from the major social media networks or the mainstream media. You certainly weren't finding it in our public schools or our universities or the CDC or big-name hospitals. Everywhere we look, every direction we walk, every place we turn our heads, we see the channeling of government talking points. That's why the church is a threat. Did you know there's a case going before the Supreme Court right now because the government wants to start making postal workers work on Sundays, which means they can't go to church? Look, if you've been following my teaching, you already know I don't believe church has to meet on Sunday, and I never did. However, if somebody does believe that, and most people do, and if based on that belief, historically, Sunday has become a convenient day because that's a day most people do get off, one has to wonder, one has to ask why we need the postal service on Sunday. So that we can get an extra day of the week from them to screw up your mail? 6 days a week of their incompetent service isn't enough? Actually, I have no problem with the mailmen themselves. They have a hard job. They do their job well. They should get paid extra just because of all the barking German shepherds they deal with. But inside the post office, when you need to go in there yourself for assistance, where prior to standing in line, you'd be well served to pitch a tent and break out a Coleman lantern. You know what I'm talking about. The guy behind the counter who just walks away the moment he's done with the person in front of you. The moment it's your turn, just casually strolls away. He doesn't even bother to tell you that he'll be right back, because he won't be right back. He's not planning on coming right back. It's his arbitrary break. He just feels like walking away, and he has a cushy government job. So what are they going to do? Well, they'll make him stop going to church, but they won't be able to do anything else. Anyway, love the post office or hate the post office, my point is that anyone working for the post office or any government job or any job whatsoever is entitled to go to church. Oh, sure, with some services like police or doctors, we need somebody on call. But how many from those communities don't go to church anyway? And even those who do, there could be a trade-off, there could be a rotation. There are ways to work this out. There have always been ways to work this out if somebody wants it to work. But to just tell somebody that he can't take the day off ever with church being an excuse, this is probably something you have not been hearing in the news. Hardly anybody is talking about it, but the ACLJ is, reading from their website right now. Your right to go to church is under attack at the Supreme Court. President Biden is eroding religious liberty, emboldening anti-Christian extremists to attack your faith. Even your right to go to church on Sunday is under fire. The U.S. Postal Service, USPS, has begun forcing postal workers to work on Sunday. In fact, the USPS refused to give a postal worker an accommodation to continue going to church on Sunday, which he had always done. And a federal court ruled that he has no right to go to church. We're fighting back at the Supreme Court. Church is essential, and our federal and constitutional rights to religious liberty must be protected. If they can block you from going to church, what's next? This case will not only affect your right to go to church, but also every religious accommodation and expression in the workplace for years to come. This is a monumental case. I was just reading from the website of the ACLJ. Of course, our government's real purpose is to close down not all churches, just conservative churches, churches with a narrative other than their own. They want to tell you what you're allowed to think about God. They want to tell you what you're allowed to think about science, about abortion, about definitions of male and female, about global warming, about disease. They want to control what you drive, what you eat, what you drink, what you smoke, what kind of currency you use. But the truth is they don't really care about any of those issues. Neither do they believe for one moment the drivel that comes out of their mouths. If they cared about the environment, they would have responded to the train derailment and chemical danger far more quickly. If they cared about carbon footprints, they wouldn't be flying all over the world in private jets to lecture on the subject when they could get together just as easily with a Zoom meeting, the way they forced all of us on Zoom in 2020 when they closed the whole country down. And they understand quite well that if Saudi Arabia drills for oil and China ignores admission standards, it won't make a hill of beans of difference what we do or do not do in America, other than the fact that it gives them more control over our lives. But again, that's all they want. Control. Why, you ask? What's in it for them? What drives this? Well, you don't drive it. Soon you won't be driving anything anymore. If talking about safety of an individual is not their true purpose, if talking points about the safety of the planet is not their true purpose, if the protected feelings of a 300-pound 60-year-old man who wants to identify himself as a 120-pound 18-year-old girl is not their true purpose, then what exactly is their purpose? It's too simple to say that it's a Marxist agenda. Oh yeah, that's part of it. That's definitely part of it, but even that doesn't explain everything, because those who head up Marxist or communist states never live the way they force the population to live, which means they don't really believe in the philosophy of redistribution. Oh, they will pit rich against poor and demonize the rich, but they love being rich themselves. Oh, they talk about the little guy, but once in power, they love the fact that you are the little guy and they are the big guy. You see, what it really gets back to is human nature. The Bible said this years ago. It's called sin. Everyone is guilty of sin, regardless of political affiliation or skin color or sexual preference. It's about sin. That is our joint inheritance. That's what it says in the Bible. That's why they don't want you studying the Bible. That's why they don't want you going to church and hearing sermons that are actually based on the Bible. There was a time in history when the world designated some people as kings and some people as peasants. Peasants and kings. Kings never lived like peasants. Neither did queens or princes or dukes or any royalty. But now we live in the modern, civilized 21st century. No politician today is going to claim he wants to be a king and that the rules for you therefore don't apply to him. No, they won't admit that, but they will live that, like Governor Newsom when he ate at a French restaurant without a mask, without social distancing, while other restaurants were closed down or forced to eat outdoors. Or when Mayor Lori Lightfoot, making it against the law to get a haircut for the sake of COVID safety, but then getting a haircut herself, and when asked why, said, "I'm in the public eye." And while they take your guns away, they have armed security guards. And while they talk about open borders, they live behind walled mansions. My friends, make no mistake, our republic is turning into a monarchy. It won't be called a monarchy, at least not at first. Right now, it's not fashionable for monarchs to admit that they want to be monarchs. So they invent Green New Deals and concerns about separation between church and state and concerns about sensitive speech and patronizing lectures about never offending anyone. But their real agenda is to destroy your freedom of expression, which destroys your individuality, because they want you to be a thoughtless, mindless, submissive peasant so that they can live the superior life. They want to pass laws that they don't have to live by, precisely because that kind of vast gulf between them and you is an aphrodisiac to them. And if the day ever comes when the rest of us lose so much democracy and so much representative government in our republic and so much control that they no longer have to hide their true feelings, they might just come out and say, "Why do you wear a mask and not me? Why are you banned from a fancy restaurant and not me? Why are you riding on horseback while I drive cars and fly in planes? Because you are a peasant, and I am a king. Deal with it. Eat your heart out." In all fairness, they might not ever use the word king. Chairman or Führer might be sufficient. I'll return where I started. There is hope, but the hope comes from God, and the courage comes from God. The courage to say, enough. We won't stand for this anymore. Remember, and let me say this once again, cowardice is not the only thing that's contagious. Courage is contagious too. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Another case goes before the Supreme Court, weighing religious freedom with the ascribed rights of the LGBTQ community. But is this just about religion, or have we now actually gotten into artistic expression? I'm going to begin by reading from the New York Post. The Supreme Court's conservative majority on Monday seemed to lean in favor of an evangelical Christian web designer who is seeking to refuse working on same-sex weddings based on her religious beliefs. Justices heard more than 2 hours of oral arguments in the case of Lori Smith, 38, who sued the Colorado Civil Rights Commission in 2016 over state anti-discrimination laws barring her from advertising that she won't create websites for couples of the same sex. Among those seeming to side with Smith was Justice Samuel Alito, who posed a hypothetical about a person offering to write speeches or wedding vows, asking, can they be forced to write vows or speeches that espouse things they loathe? Justice Neil Gorsuch, meanwhile, referred to Smith as an individual who says she will sell and does sell to everyone all manner of websites, but that she won't sell a website that requires her to express a view about marriage that she finds offensive. Colorado is compelling and censoring my speech and forcing me to design and create custom artwork that celebrates messages that go against my deeply held beliefs, Smith has said previously. My faith is at the core of who I am. Under Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act, businesses are not allowed to deny the public their goods and services based on race, gender, sexual orientation, and religion, and they can't post notices doing so either. Eric Olson, the Colorado Solicitor General, argued on Monday that Smith wants a license to discriminate, quote-unquote, and was pressed by Justice Clarence Thomas over the lack of precedence in allowing accommodation laws to dictate or curb free speech. But the liberal justices expressed concern on the slippery slope of setting a precedent in favor of Smith. Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, how about people who don't believe in interracial marriage? Or about people who don't believe that disabled people should get married? Where's the line? Alito pushed back, asking if it's fair to equate opposition to same-sex marriage to opposition to interracial marriage. If I understand you, you're saying yes, she can refuse because there's ideology just in the fact that it's Mike and Harry and there's a picture of these guys together, Justice Kagan said. Smith argues centennial state law clashes with her rights to free speech and to refuse business that conflicts with her religious beliefs. Her lawyer, Kristen Wagner, told the justices Smith believes opposite-sex marriage honors scripture and same-sex marriage contradicts it. Olson warned that if Smith wins, businesses could refuse business based on all sorts of racist, sexist, and bigoted views. A company just cannot refuse to serve gay couples as it seeks to do here, just as a Christmas store cannot announce no Jews allowed, Olson said. The married mother of one who owns graphic design firm 303 Creative LLC maintains she has no issue working with LGBTQ clients on other projects that don't involve marriage and has done so in the past. There have been calls for Supreme Court Associate Justice Amy Coney Barrett to recuse herself from Smith's case as a devout Catholic. The High Court, which currently has a majority of conservative judges, legalized gay marriage in 2015. 2018. The Supreme Court, which has a 6-3 conservative majority, is expected to issue its decision by the end of June. All right, that is the New York Post I was reading from. Let me respond. First of all, yes, at the moment with this case, most of the justices are conservative, at least on paper. My friends, I am not exactly breathing a sigh of relief that the Supreme Court is a conservative majority. Yes, at times they have made good rulings. Other times, they have not. They have been a coin toss. Often they cave. Often they capitulate. Well, that goes without saying. But enough of the conservatives for a moment. Let's get back to some of the liberal sentiment going around over this case. Here's the part you just gotta love. Amy Coney Barrett should recuse herself because as a Catholic, she has a viewpoint and standard related to this issue. Everybody on that bench has a viewpoint related to this issue. Justice Kagan is herself lesbian. Is anyone asking her to recuse herself from a case that is about gays and lesbians? And if we really want to talk about conflicts of interest, how about when the person certifying the election was also running for office in the election? Like the election of, oh, say, governor of Arizona? Katie Hobbs ran for governor and was certified as the legitimate winner by, yes, Katie Hobbs! Thank you for playing. You didn't see any of the same people who called for the recusal of Barrett call for the recusal of Hobbs or Kagan. So let's just drop this shameless hypocrisy that's been in our faces, shall we? My friends, my dearest friends, this situation before the court is nothing new. A lot of you may remember the case of the Christian baker a few years ago who refused to decorate a cake for gay weddings. He never said he wouldn't sell them a cake. That's the way it was portrayed, that he refused to serve gay people. That was a downright lie. He never said he wouldn't bake them a cake. He never said he wouldn't sell them a cake. He said he wasn't going to decorate it with a message that violates his religious convictions. My friends, this is not just about religion anymore. It's also about freedom of artistic expression. I would think every artist in the country, liberal or conservative, would be up in arms over this. What's next? Will painters be told what to paint on their canvases? Will novelists and film directors be ordered to put gay characters in their stories? Already, pressure the last couple of years has been put on the Hallmark Channel to do just that. And Hallmark has caved. But at the moment, it's just lobbyist pressure. Hallmark didn't actually get a command from a court yet, but it's coming. Just you wait and see. Already, a filmmaker in Minnesota has been undergoing legal issues over a documentary he made that talked about marriage because some soul wanted him to include a discussion of gay marriage. He's challenging this in the court, but it's an actual law in Minnesota, and that this is happening at all, however the case pans out, should be chilling to all of us. It is only a thin line between a documentary movie and a regular run-of-the-mill Hollywood fiction movie. And yes, designing a website is also a work of artistic expression. Designing the writing on top of a cake is a matter of artistic expression and a matter of conviction. Artists express their own beliefs, their thoughts, their messages. Supposing somebody went into a bakery asking them to decorate a cake for a special Ku Klux Klan event, some grand imperial wizard's birthday. Or here's another scenario. Try this one out for size. Let's just reverse what's going on right now. Let's say a Christian couple goes to an openly gay baker. Hi there. Say, here's what we want, a wedding cake, and we want you to decorate it with special icing. And with the icing, we want you to quote from Genesis and beyond Genesis. We want you to state, we want you to affirm in the icing writing that God ordains marriage as a union only between a man and a woman. We want those exact words on the cake. Man should appear in the cake. Woman should appear in the cake. The word only should appear in the cake. Got that? Questions? Okay, great. Let us know when it's ready and have a nice day. Should he be expected to make that cake? Would any court in our land force him to put that icing writing on that cake? We won't live to see the day. And let me tell you something. Even though I personally do not agree with the gay lifestyle, I myself would not expect a gay baker to decorate a cake like that because I am a believer in the First Amendment. And yes, the amendment applies even to those whose beliefs I differ with. That's why we have a First Amendment. If we were always going to agree on things, we wouldn't need a First Amendment. And yes, I do agree also a Christmas store can't say no Jews allowed, but neither can a Jew go into a Christmas store and insist that they sell Hanukkah decorations. You can't tell somebody what to sell in their own store. Now, as it happens, you know this, most Christmas stores actually do sell Hanukkah decorations, but that's not my point. Those that do so freely. Those that do so by choice, and they should be just as free to not sell them. And I'm sure there are some Christmas stores somewhere that don't sell Hanukkah decorations. And folks, I say this as a Jew who also accepts Christ. I believe Christ is my Messiah. A Christian store owner should be able to say, yes, as a Jew, you are welcome to buy anything you want in our store, but you will not tell us what to sell, just as we will not go into a Jewish delicatessen and order you to serve ham sandwiches. Back in 2008, when Proposition 8 was going on, that was the proposition in California that defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman, a proposition that was eventually overturned by the courts, a proposition that I knew would be overturned by the courts. I supported this proposition, but I knew it was a waste of time. Anyway, while this was going on, 2008, I went over the air on my radio show and I said, I don't believe in gay marriage, but if I thought for one moment that the legalization of same-sex marriage would put a stop to all this, that gay people would now rest in their freedoms, which they themselves claim are the only freedoms they are asking for. If I believed for one second that the legalization of same-sex marriage would make us square, I could live with it. I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't agree with it, but I could live with it. But it won't stop there. Mark my words. That's what I said, my friends, over the air back in 2008. Yes, I predicted that it wouldn't stop there because I had been studying for years the genuine mission and strategy of militant gay activists. Not the gay community at large, specific, and there are much fewer, militant gay activists. And I knew that for them, marriage was only the beginning. Live and let live, we were told back then. How does it hurt you if two other people want to get married? It's their business. How does it hurt your family? How does it hurt your children? How does it hurt the church? Well, it did hurt, didn't it? And it didn't stop with marriage, did it? Almost immediately, Christian websites like eHarmony.com were ordered by judges to open up their service to same-sex couples. In many places around the country, pressure is being put upon churches to perform gay weddings, even if they don't believe in them. Little girls in schools are told they might really be boys. Little boys in schools are told they might really be girls. We have Drag Queen Day for children at our libraries. Oh no, this isn't affecting our children and our families in our churches at all, has it? Okay, someone listening right now thinks I'm being unloving. Let me tell you something. I have been in full-time Christian ministry for many years. A lot of that was on college campuses. And in this ministry, I have interacted with many people, many students who struggled with same-sex attraction. They confided in me as their pastor. They confided in me because they saw somebody that they felt they could confide in without being attacked. They were treated with respect. They were treated with compassion. I hate using that word because it's been hijacked by the left, but if you want to look at what the word compassion really means, they were treated by me with compassion. And like I just said, frankly, the militant gay community does not speak for most gay people. Most people related to the LGBTQ community just want to be left alone and live in peace. Well, I don't agree with their lifestyle, they do have my sympathy. And you think about Bob, if you disagree with their actions, if you disagree with their lifestyle, then how can you be sympathetic? That's hate, isn't it? Isn't it important, Bob, to speak against hate? Those who are against same-sex marriage are filled with hate, aren't they? My friend, with all due respect, that's quite a sweeping generalization. Have you personally met and conversed with every single person opposed to same-sex marriage? Have you allowed them to speak for themselves? Or are you letting others filter and restate their opinions? And how exactly are you defining hate? I respect your desire to be loving, but please be careful here. Stop, take a deep breath, and notice the subtlety of what's going on. Otherwise, you may find yourself guilty of the same kinds of bigotry you claim to be against. Before pulling words such as compassion or tolerance out of the arsenal, please put yourself under the microscope of these very words. Can you show compassion and tolerance for people who have a view of homosexuality contrary to your own? Yeah, but Bob, disapproving of homosexuality is like disapproving of an entire race because gay people were born that way. Actually, my friend, nothing of the sort has ever been proved. This notion will be challenged in just a few minutes. Hold on. But for now, for the moment, even if you disagree, viewing sexuality as different from race or skin color isn't really that far of a stretch, is it? Dedicated liberals are quick to make this comparison by couching the debate under headings such as equality or civil rights. They often forget how many African Americans and Latinos resist the alleged parallel. 70% of California's African American voters voted in favor of Proposition 8. Once again, that's the California law, since overturned by the courts, which at the time stated that marriage would only be recognized as a union between a man and a woman, and 70% of African Americans voted for this. A little more than half of California's Hispanic voters joined them. Reverend William Owens, head of the Coalition of African American Pastors, is himself a civil rights activist. He had this to say about the comparison between gay rights and the African American plight. Every morning I wake up, I look in the mirror and I see a black man, and there is absolutely nothing I can do to change the color of my skin. They are not suffering what we suffered, and I sympathize with people who face discrimination. Every person should be treated with dignity and respect, but what they're going through does not compare to what we went through. Owens went on to say that changing the definition of marriage would be devastating to all of our families. Back to the question of people being born gay. That has never been established as a fact. Homosexuality as a learned behavior and psychological emotional disorder was the widespread belief and teaching of the American Psychiatric Association for many years, but the tide began to change in the early 70s. Many people are unaware of the circumstances which led to homosexuality being declassified as an emotional disorder by the APA in 1973. You may never have heard about the pressure from gay activists and gay psychiatrists who were involved in the meetings. You should know that the discussions leading to the vote were political and instilled a great deal of fear. In fact, so extended was the pressure that only 1/3 of the ballots sent out were ever returned. Out of those returned, only 58% agreed to declassify homosexuality as a disorder. Now get this, catch this, just 58%. I know that sounds like a majority, but my friends, I mean 58% out of the 1/3 of the ballots returned. But today's spin concentrates on the bottom line that the vote, however it was done, chose to declassify homosexuality as a disorder in the DSM-3. Prior to this time, homosexuals not only sought help from psychologists, but also received healing. Dr. Charles Socorides, a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst who had successfully treated gays for more than 20 years, was a part of the APA. In his book, Overcoming Homosexuality, he claimed that the militant gay movement was responsible for, quote-unquote, the greatest medical hoax of the century. Although doctors in attendance at the 1973 conference continued to argue long afterward about the proportion of study versus politics, Ronald Bayer, a psychiatrist who took the view in opposition to Socorides, corroborates the political atmosphere in his own book, Homosexuality in American Psychiatry, The Politics of Diagnosis. He says, the entire process from the first confrontations organized by gay demonstrators at psychiatric conventions to the referendum demanded by Orthodox psychiatrists seemed to violate the most basic expectations about how questions of science should be resolved. Instead of being engaged in a sober consideration of data, psychiatrists were swept up in political controversy. Those were the words of Ronald Bayer, and that was a leftist agreeing with the guy on the right. Although many gay people today sincerely claim that they cannot remember a time when they weren't attracted to the same sex, sex, that does not necessarily mean that they were born homosexuals. Elizabeth Moberly, a research psychologist for Oxford and Cambridge, explains this in her book, Homosexuality, A New Christian Ethic, pointing out that people absorb their key influence of sexual orientation between the ages of 2 and 5, a time in life most of us would not remember anyway. Even molecular biologist Dean Hammer, who headed one of the famous studies which sought to find genetic explanations, said, and I quote, "Our studies try to pinpoint the genetic factors, not to negate the psychosocial factors." My friends, it may someday be discovered that there are two types of homosexuality, a learned behavior and a genetic predisposition. In either case, the homosexual in all likelihood did not choose his or her sexual orientation and should not be blamed for inward feelings or impulses. Likewise, in either case, the acting out of such impulses would still be unnatural behavior. It is believed that one could be born with a predisposition toward alcoholism too, but would we encourage an alcoholic to drink? None of this means that homosexuals are bad people, but while today's gay activists point to themselves as victims for not having been able to legally marry so many years, they are unwilling to consider the fact that they may have been victimized in some other way through the subtleties of various emotional influences while little kids, while growing up. Maybe something happened in their upbringing which, through no fault of their own, produced homosexual impulses. If a person has such tendencies and is not sure whether they stem from genetics or environment, what exactly is wrong with seeking help from a counselor on the chance, at least, that it might be an acquired behavior? And why should the desire to reach out and offer healing to such an individual be interpreted as hatred? In summary, this is not about hatred. This is not about discrimination. This is about freedom of religion, freedom of artistic expression, and freedom of speech, period. Included in the freedom of speech is the freedom to correct historical revision and point out falsehoods. It has never been proven that people are born gay. That was a convenient tactic to associate the subject with race. But the very same people who sold this to our nation regarding the way we are born now claim sexual fluidity and that one can change genders and change back and forth again at the drop of a hat. How did they get away with this nonsense? By boiling the frog slowly over the last 5 decades. People were desensitized. People grew numb to it. Just some things to think about as we await the latest SCOTUS ruling. The ruling won't come out till June of 2023. In the meantime, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connor's strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Very good. You know why I said good afternoon is because we just had to turn our clocks backwards 1 hour last Sunday. And I could have sworn 4 years ago we voted on not doing that anymore. So I don't know why we're still doing
it. I would love it if it would be, I like it when it gets dark early. I've always been more of a fall, winter person, but whichever way they do it, it would be nice if we could go the way of Arizona where we don't have to keep doing this.
I mean, it's not a huge stickler for my car personally to change it manually. But still, I'm just kind of, you know, done with it is what I'm saying.
It's kind of funny because my car, which I bought a few years ago, every year I'd have to just try to remember how to set it again.
Yep.
And hold this button and then press this and turn that. And I was just dreading it. And I put it off for a couple of days. And this time, the very first time I tried it, it all just came back to me.
Oh, good for you.
But a friend of mine on Facebook last year, she came up with the perfect solution. She says, I know exactly how to deal with my car clock. I'm going to just leave it alone. And in 6 months, it'll have the correct time again.
I like that idea too. That's pretty good.
I love that.
Yeah. So I wanted to take all your listeners back to when I was in college. When I first attended college, I was going to Montana State University, all the way up in Bozeman, Montana. When I was there, my parents made sure that I needed to take a extracurricular activity of some sort. And I did not know what to do. I didn't know what major I really wanted to go into or anything. But the one thing that I did want to try to do was try their college radio station there. And ever since then, I got hooked as a bug, basically, the radio bug, basically, there.
So, well, you do it very well.
Thank you.
Both
thank
off
you.
The air and on the air, I should say.
Thank you. So one of the creative things that we could do on our show was come up with phone topics. And I would like to try the phone topic today and see what your opinion is and maybe your listeners as well by them emailing you at questions@bobsiegel.net, their answers. So here's the question. So the situation was me and my friend, we went out skiing one day and we were on our way back. He was driving and I had the wallet with me to pay. He only had his license, driver's license in his wallet. That was it. He didn't have any money on him at all. So while we were driving back, we were both kind of getting hungry. And so I suggested, hey, we should go to this restaurant. And he said, no, I don't feel like that. I want to go to this restaurant instead. And I said, well, I'm paying for it, so I should have more say if that's the case. He's like, but I'm driving, so therefore I get to decide where we go. And so
isn't
I thought it was
amazing how we come up with these rules and laws in our head and the ways we rationalize them.
I hear you. So overall, my question, so in the end, we did go to his place because he seemed to be very adamant about going to his restaurant. But I would like to hear your opinion. And again, listen.
Oh, now you said you were going to pay for it, but he was driving.
Yes, exactly.
So you were going to go where he wanted to go anyway.
I had to, unfortunately. Yeah, exactly. So I would like to hear your opinion. Does the person who's driving have more say or the guy who is going to pay has more say in
this
situation?
If I had to make it based on those choices, I would go with the person who's going to pay because mm-hmm. what if he can only afford so much and the other guy wants to go to a real swanky, expensive restaurant? But truthfully, I wouldn't use either one of those criteria. I think that whenever, and it's easier with two people, but whenever you're with a group, and we used to go through this when we'd go to a bunch of people at Disneyland, which rides do we want? I think there are times when we have to just decide that certain hills are not our hills to die for. And if we're in a group situation, just go along and perhaps be willing to take turns. Now, my wife and I love going out to dinner.
Right.
And it's usually, where do you want to go? Well, no, where do you want to go? And we both like
yes.
to defer to the other one.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it myself.
Has this ever happened where she's like, oh, I want this particular food. And I'll be like, okay, so then we'll go to this restaurant. She'll go, no, I don't want that anymore. Like, what? I thought you wanted chicken fingers. Yeah. Why are you saying no to Chick-fil-A all of a sudden? Whatever.
Well, what happens, I get this from my wife, and I get this even more from my son, and it's actually very common. It starts out in the conversation, where do you want to go? Oh, I don't care. Anything's fine. So then you go, okay, well, how about this?
Yeah, it just changes all of a sudden. Oh, so now you have a decision all of a sudden that you want to go to. Yeah. So again, listeners, if you
have... But I want to say, my wife is very gracious. And a lot of times, her problem is that she will not speak up for herself about where she wants to go. So like, sometimes if I'm working at Starbucks or something, or coming back home from the radio station, I ask her if she wants me to bring her something. I'm going to grab some dinner or some lunch or something. She'll say, well, where are you going? And then I'll say, well, I could go anywhere. She'll go, well, just tell me where you're going. Then I'll tell you if that's a place I want to eat at. And I said, well, honey, all the places I go to, I love. So one is just as good as another. You might as well just tell me where you want to go. She doesn't do that. She's a very gracious, very sharing, very unselfish person. And I like that.
Yeah.
But I also feel that as her husband, I need to kind of be her advocate and speak up for her, even when I'm speaking up for her restaurant choice at the expense of a restaurant that I might have preferred to go to.
Right, right. So again, if you want to see your answer, go to questions@bobsiegel.net. Otherwise, we'll catch you guys next week.
All right. We'll see if somebody wants to chime in on this. We will see you next time.